Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Congress, get the job done on the CHIPS Act, a message from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. And today on the show, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and it's our first Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, July 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Dorsey Hager is going to be our first guest on the show, longtime supporter and contributor to America's Workforce. He's the Executive Secretary of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. And if you've been listening to this show for the past couple of months, we've been giving you updates on the Intel plant. This was back, February, when they announced that Intel was going to build a $20 billion facility outside of Columbus. $20 billion. And it may go over $100 billion once they expand the plant, which they have done in various cities around America. Now, here's the problem. Congress has not gotten its act together on the bipartisan innovation bill. We've been following this legislation with the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and Scott Paul, who is the executive director of that group, sent out an email just 2 days ago saying, come on, let's get this done. And he pointed out that more than 45,000 Alliance for American Manufacturing supporters have now written to Congress in support of this legislation, including the Leveling the Playing Field Act 2.0, which would enforce our trade laws. I mean, there's several pieces of legislation, but it's all bundled under the Bipartisan Innovation Act. And Scott points out that one company, First Solar, decided against building a factory in this country. Why? Because of uncertainty about investment and a failure to enforce our trade laws. And he pointed out some semiconductor manufacturers, he didn't mention any name, but we know what he's talking about, are rethinking their American investment. Now, Dorsey is of the opinion that they're not going to pull out. They're strong-arming Congress. Get the job done. Get the job done. AmericanManufacturing.org is the website if you want to join the chorus of people who are telling Congress to get this done. Now, we talked to Scott. This was in the June 23rd edition of the show. Again, that's archived at awfpodcast.com. You could listen to the specifics. Dorsey is also doing what he can with lawmakers in Central Ohio to make sure we can get this across the finish line. So important to the state of Ohio. I mean, we've seen so many jobs over the years just disappear completely because of wrongdoing. You know, not forward thinking by members of Congress. It's time for that to change. Fred Redmond will be joining us later in the show. Fred is now the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. What a great guy. And I'll tell you, he's been on the show for many, many years, and about 8-9 months ago, we started our first Friday with Fred when it was announced that he was going to take over Liz Shuler's position following the death of Rich Trumka. Liz Shuler was Secretary Treasurer. She's now president and reelected to that position in Philadelphia. And Fred is also a vice president of the AFL-CIO. And some of you may not know his past. His path began in 1973 when he went to work at Reynolds Metals. This was in Chicago and became a member of the Steelworkers Union. He was very active in his local union almost immediately, serving as shop steward, eventually vice president, served three terms as local president. In 1996, he joined the Steelworkers staff, working with local unions in the Chicago area. For decades, he served the steelworkers in various staff and leadership roles, assisting local unions as international vice president for human affairs, a position to which he was first elected to in 2006. Fred oversaw the union's Civil and Human Rights Department and worked with the steelworker allies across the country in responding to attacks on voting rights and combating economic inequality. And he's going to talk about all these issues because there's a lot of things that happen at the convention that were kind of off the radar. And we'll talk about organizing. We'll talk about immigration, things that need to be addressed in this country. And I'll tell you, Fred is such a great guy, kind of folksy, and a big part of America's workforce, so he'll be our second guest. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.com. .org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. And if you miss a show, hopefully you don't do that. But just in case that happens, awfpodcast.com. We have them all archived there, awfpodcast.com. All right, let's go to Columbus, Ohio right now. And joining us on line number one, one of our regulars, longtime sponsor, good guy, hardworking guy, Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. ColumbusConstruction.org is their website. You can follow them on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. Dorsey Hager, how are we doing today, my brother?
Great. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. Hard to believe we're chugging away through summer. Summer goes by too darn fast. That's the problem. I mean, here we are upon the July 4th holiday weekend. Before you know it, it's going to be Labor Day, a day we all celebrate, all working men and women celebrate in the United States of America and places around the world. But we've got some issues we want to cover on the show, and I've been promoting today's show a lot because of the announcement last week by Intel, and you know all about this, Dorsey. We're supposed to have a groundbreaking in less than 3 weeks. July 22nd, I believe, was the groundbreaking. All of a sudden, Intel says, whoa, wait a minute. We can't do it right now, and it's all because of our Congress. Talk to me about this, Dorsey. What are you hearing in Central Ohio about this?
So what's funny is when I saw this announcement about a groundbreaking, it took me back to my days as a business manager. And guys would read an article, you know, in the paper or on social media about this project or that project or this project. And, of course, the first thing they would do, because this is a right-away society now, let's get information, you know, right away, is they would call, text, email me, whatever they would do, how they would communicate. And they would say, hey, I want to work on that job. When is that job starting? And my reply, which ticked a lot of them off, but was absolutely 100% honest, is that job is starting when you walk through the front gate with your toolbox in your left hand and your lunchbox in your right hand. That's when that job's starting. And that's what the Intel announcement reminded me of, because it kind of triggered feelings of old. And I cannot tell you how many tens of 20s of 30s, maybe even 100 phone calls I got. I had somebody this morning stop by and ask me at breakfast, what's the deal with Intel? I think, and this is my take on it, and I haven't spoken to anybody from Intel, but obviously there's a huge investment here. There's a huge investment by the state. There's a huge commitment on behalf of the state, the governor, the lieutenant governor. The project's going to get done. The project's going to get built. It's too important. I think that Intel's goal was to have the CHIPS Act passed in May. And their political people are some of the smartest political people in the world. And I think that they realized that if this didn't get passed in May, we were going to get into the dog days of summer. We were going to get into the Supreme Court decisions. We were going to get into election time, primary time, stuff like that, and that this thing would get bogged down and would not get passed. I still think the CHIPS Act is going to get passed. I don't think there's a lot of motivation for it to get passed immediately. I think the groundbreaking is still going to happen. It's not going to happen on schedule. As we talked in your last interview when I was with you a month ago, they've already awarded a lot of the site work. They've invested a lot of money, so I'm sure that they're going to build this. The chips are needed. The problem, from my understanding, the people that I talk to and the calls that I make, and then friends of mine that are working on behalf of trying to get this CHIPS Act passed, who have been to D.C. and talked to different senators and representatives, is obviously politics is playing into this, which is what they expected to happen if this lag passed May. You have Democrats that are adding things to the CHIPS Act bill under the COMPETES Act. You have Republicans that are upset that they feel the Democrats are adding things. And I think the Republicans are also a little upset that they feel like the Democrats are taking credit for all of this, because we know that under 4 years of Trump, even when he had a Republican majority in the House and Senate, the one thing that he promised building trades members and Sean McGarvey was an infrastructure bill, and he never even brought it up. So the president has already passed infrastructure. They're looking at passing the CHIPS Act or the COMPETES Act. And I think the Republicans are sitting there, and politically they're looking at it that, hey, Congress isn't very popular. We've got some competitive Senate races. The president's not popular. Why do we want to do anything to increase their popularity, especially if we're going to be in the majority in a couple months? We'll just wait then and pass this thing on our own terms. And I think that's what they're doing. So if this delays this 3 months, 6 months, unfortunately, that's what's going to happen. But I do think that it's eventually going to get passed. I think it's too important, not only for production, manufacturing, for the chips, for the for everything. I think it's also extremely important for the defense and the protection of our country. You know, you and I talked a little bit about the chips and some of the stuff that I saw out in Arizona and Portland, and obviously trying to keep this as low key as I can because I had a little bit of clearance. But, you know, one of the chips that they make might, you know, go into your inside dome light for your truck. That's important. But some of the chips that they use on laser-guided, you know, radar systems or fighter jets or stuff that go to defense contractors, those are extremely important too. And unfortunately, there's a huge issue right now with everything going on around the world that we've talked about, the invasion of Ukraine, some of the instability in Taiwan. I think you're seeing a lot of these manufacturers wanting to bring a lot of this manufacturing back to the United States to where they feel like it's safer, more productive, and it's not being outsourced.
Dorsey, I would think with Intel being as big as they are, you know, they got political operatives in Washington and they're trying to do the best they can to make sure this gets across the finish line. I'm just wondering, though, and maybe you can clarify this for me, because I'm hearing that this CHIPS Act or the Bipartisan Innovation Act, however you want to frame it, is kind of for the long haul. Because this plant is what? It's a $20 billion and they're already... If you factor in the Bipartisan Innovation Act, it will take it to like $100 billion. Is that the scenario that's being laid out? I mean, they're looking down the road, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about this before. Right now, phase one is right around $20 billion. They're already discussing phase two, which would be an additional $20 billion. And then the CHIPS or COMPETES Act passes, and there's more money in there for growth, then you're saying that this thing could be $100 to $125 billion, and it could go from 3 years to 25 years. And I think it's really going to help us compete again in the global market because we'll be producing the chips here. So, yeah, this CHIPS Act or this COMPETES Act, whatever you want to call it, you know, which is what countries all over the world are doing to try to get some of this work, either from Intel or from Taiwan Microchip or whoever. The United States needs to step up, and they need to keep doing it. And again, I understand the politics. I've talked to people on both sides, Republicans and Democrats. But gosh, you hope a day comes sooner than later when they put politics aside and do what's best for the country. And I just don't know when that's going to be.
I hear you. And it's not only just Intel. I'm reading a statement here from Scott Paul. Scott's a great guy. I don't know if you know him, but he is one of the sponsors of America's Workforce. In fact, we just had him on last week. That show, by the way, you can check it out at awfpodcast.com. It was the June 23rd show. And just yesterday, he issued a press release on all this. He said, we can already see the consequences of inaction. First Solar. I don't know if you know that company, but they decided against building a factory in the United States. Why? Due to uncertainty about investment and a failure to enforce our trade laws. That's a big issue, too. Some major semiconductor manufacturers are rethinking their new American investments because of these legislative delays. Hint, hint, Intel in Central Ohio. I think we could read through that. And Scott goes on to say, if the U.S. doesn't step up here, guess what? Other countries will. I mean, this is a global economy. Let's face it. Now, going back to what you said, you think it's eventually going to happen. And, you know, Intel's in a position that they can play hardball right now. So, hopefully, as you pointed out, the both sides, Democrats and Republicans, can come together. And I get it with the Republican. They don't want Biden to win on anything right now. And the Democrats, maybe they are asking for too much. So we'll see what happens. What are they saying in Central Ohio about this? I mean, we don't get much of it. We get some information up here in northeastern Ohio. But what's the scuttlebutt down there, Dorsey?
Well, I just met a couple of days ago with Representative Jay Edwards, Southeast Ohio, and obviously manufacturing and workforce development, job creation is at the top of his agenda and at the top of his list. And obviously he's been a big advocate for unions for a long time, going back to when he was in House leadership. And that was the first thing he said to me when we sat down and he talked. He's like, what do you think about Intel? And I kind of gave the same answer that I gave you. It seems like the investment and everything, it's going to go. But again, I mean, you know, we talk about infighting here in the state between Republicans and Democrats, and I think we saw that, you know, with the gerrymandering and the maps and all this and the Supreme Court stuff that happened here. You know, it's nowhere as near as bad as it is at the federal level, but it's bad here as well. And that's what I told, you know, Representative Edwards. I said, listen, there's guys at Jobs Ohio and One Columbus that you're friends with. There's guys there that I know well and I'm friends with. I know that they're killing the phones. I know that they're going back and forth to D.C. I know that they're meeting with the people they need to meet. I know the governor. I know the lieutenant governor. I know people are really working hard on this. So, you know, the unions have kind of stepped in a little bit and helped. We're going to continue to do what we can to help, you know, the relationships with we have with the Troy Baldersons and the Joyce Beatties and the Mike Careys and them. But it just seems like I said, right now we're kind of at an impasse, and hopefully we kind of get off of this and this thing moves faster, you know, but it's where we are right now. It's frustrating and it's not funny, but it does make you laugh because it's like a bad B movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. And you know, the state of Ohio did step up on this. The governor, lawmakers, I mean, they all pledged, I'm reading, more than $2 billion in tax credits. And I'm just wondering, do you think maybe Intel is saying, well, you know, that $2 billion was good. Maybe since things aren't happening the way they are or should be in Washington, maybe you can give us more tax credits. You think that might be part of the scenario here?
I don't think they're trying to do that. I think they're happy with what the state has done and the governor and the lieutenant governor. I think they're happy with everything that's coming out of the White House and the Biden administration. Again, I think that they're just frustrated, you know, with Congress and the federal government. I mean, you know, not to get into social issues, because that's not what I focus on. I focus on issues that, you know, represent my members. But if you look at Roe versus Wade and the strict partisan divide, you know, on that and some of the abortion laws throughout the several states here in the United States, and then you look at, you know, Biden and the Democrats in Congress, you know, looking at increasing some of the baby formula and stuff, and almost every Republican in the House voted against that. So it's amazing how some people will vote against their, and it happens at all levels of government, and I get it, but it's amazing how some people will vote against something that's good for the people they represent just because their party is for or against it. And it's unfortunate that we've came to such a political divide, you know, like that right now. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, how do you vote against baby formula? I don't know, but it happens. It happens in America. That just shows you how crazy it is. One more question here before we break. And I think I know the answer to this already, but I'm going to ask it anyway. This hasn't slowed down the process of getting more workers. I mean, we're still at, what, 7,000 construction workers for this job? So you really got to move on this, right?
Yeah, we really got to move on this. And, you know, to your listeners, I'm going to sound horribly prepared for this interview this month. But I mean, I get texts, emails, phone calls every 3 or 4 hours from my members, from delegates about, you know, a school here, a hospital there, a supplier for electric vehicles here. And it's amazing all the work that's going on. So while the focus is on Intel, and why a lot of people I talk to, and heck, even when I go home and my wife have dinner together, we go out, you know, she asks about it. There's so much other stuff going on, so much other stuff. And that's why the Workforce Development Committee and the plan that we developed when we knew that this announcement was coming is so important. And we had our meeting 2 weeks ago. We meet the third Monday of every month, and it's amazing how much input and participation there is between managers, agents, organizing, training directors, marketing people from all local unions here in Central Ohio. And that's our goal. We need to look at finding 6,000 to 9,000 people in the next 36 months. And we're going to continue to do that. And I know we've talked about it before, but it always seems like we've been reactionary. This gives us a chance to be proactive, and that's what we're going to do.
There you go. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. We're going to take a quick break. Later in the show, it's our first Friday with Fred Redmond, the number two man in the AFL-CIO, just back from the wonderful convention in the city of Philadelphia. We'll talk about that and much more. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hello from the Communication Workers of America, District 4. We are a labor union representing a vast array of workers in different industries, including the Association of Flight Attendants, Telecommunications, CWA Passenger Services, Public Health Care, and Education Workers, the IUE, CWA Industrial Division, the National Association of Broadcast Employees, the CWA News Guild, not to mention our growing digital sector, and many others. If you're interested in organizing your work group or learning more about what it means to be CWA strong, visit our website at www.cwad4.org. That's cwad4.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least 6 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to Central Ohio, rejoin Dorsey Hager, one of our regulars here, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. All right, talk to me about this Building Futures graduation. I know you and I have had many conversations about building futures, driving futures. What did this graduation happen already or what?
Yeah, we talked about a graduation that we had in the spring for our first cohort of Building Futures this year, and we had it at the Teamsters Hall, and God bless the Teamsters and the historic building there at 555 East Ridge Street. Great hall, great facility, but you know, when you graduate 12, you know, we had our all-female cohort. We had 12 ladies from Driving Futures and 15 ladies from Building Futures, and then they bring their friends and family who are so happy to share in their success, and then you have, you know, the county commissioners, you have the mayor who spoke, you have city council people, you have judges who are working very closely with the program, taking our flyers, taking our information, disseminating it to people who come in front of them in the courthouse who may be down on their luck, maybe looking for a career to help them in some of their issues that they're having. But anyway, you have all this community buy-in and the NAACP and the Columbus Urban League. Well, easy to say, you know, we had over 160 people attend our last graduation. So immediately I met with the president of the NAACP, who's a huge supporter of the program, Nana Watson, Kelly Harrop, our outreach director, and then Leland Bass, our program manager. And I said, hey, I said, we got to do something else. And they're like, well, what about a park or what about something outside? And I said, first of all, look at me. I'm not standing out in the heat for a graduation at the end of June. We got to find a place bigger. So I talked to Tim Ely, business manager at the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, Kenny Davis, our finance secretary, my good friends there. They got an immaculate hall. It's wonderful. You know, we talk about it in the spring. They host the Union Sportsman's Alliance dinner every year, which is the biggest event that the Union Sportsman's Alliance has in North America. So we asked if we could use their hall. They let us use their hall, and it was truly an incredible event. We had about 20 kids from Driving Futures graduate. We had 26 kids from Building Futures graduate. So almost 50 people who put in the time, the effort, and the energy to go through the training. And, you know, if they haven't already, very shortly are going to be placed by Kelly Harrop and Leland Bass and, you know, jobs as Teamsters, electricians, sheet metal workers, you know, laborers, plumbers, insulators, and they're going to step right in, iron workers, and they're going to step right into the middle class. This is really, really a cool thing. Some of our female graduates, you know, Kelly's been really proud of this, and she's been talking about this because she handles all the placement. But, you know, we had five young ladies from the female graduate that wanted to be laborers. Kelly was able to work with Vince Irvin, Bobby McCaskill, and Mike Engbert from the laborers. They went to a company called Miller Pipeline, who does a lot of pipeline work, a lot of laborers work, and they put the ladies on right away. And, you know, they're working 6-10s, which is great, making some overtime, and they're starting them off at, you know, $29 an hour on the check. So they went day one right into the middle class, which is awesome. It's a great opportunity, and it's doing really, really well.
That's good to hear. You know, I was reading a story. You know, school's not in session now, so this was in May when this story was posted out of Newark, Ohio, which is Licking County, where the Intel plant is to be located. And it's kind of funny, too, because they're treating a lot of high school students as rock stars and college football stars. I mean, they're going after them as if they're being recruited to a major team, a major school. And they did a job fair, and they had about 40 employers that visited Newark High School, handing out brochures and all kind of freebies with the company name. And I guess they got a pretty good response out of that. But that's the environment that we're in right now. I mean, hey, you know what? You don't have to go to college. There's a great opportunity. And you think, I know the IBEW is doing really well, especially with you got Facebook and I believe Google. I don't want to get into Google here in a minute. But these are, you know, very, very intricate jobs wiring these facilities, making sure that they have the latest technologies, which you learn in an apprenticeship program. So it's interesting to see what's going on in America. And that being said, what is this Google grant all about, Dorsey?
So Leland Bass, our program manager, and Kelly Harrop, they did a great job doing a presentation to Google. As you know, three data centers are coming here to Columbus, Central Ohio region. Obviously, you know, we've talked about this before. When companies are coming here, companies are looking to grow and expand. You know, they say that the biggest thing is, you know, do you have the people to do the work, and do they resemble the community in which we live and we work in? And obviously Building Futures and Driving Futures accomplishes that. People are known about a national level. So Google came in, met with us. They wanted to talk about doing some partnering, how they could help with the program, because they love it. It's so great. So out of Kelly and Leland's presentation, we were awarded a grant from Google that we're going to use to help train kids. We're going to use to help update our facilities, purchase equipment, tools and stuff, and just do some all around great things to really, really, really help enhance and grow the program. So we're really happy with Google and their partnership, and we're tremendously proud of Kelly and Leland, the presentation they gave, and also the IBW, the business manager, Pat Hook. So really, really happy about it. It's going to be great, and I know there's going to be more opportunities coming as others come as well.
I see recently Governor DeWine signed a capital budget bill, $3.5 billion. I could only assume you had an opportunity to go over that. That's got to be kind of an eye-opener for you. What's on the table there?
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to really dig deep into it, but I know there's a lot of projects here in Columbus, Central Ohio, that are in the bill, and we're going to look forward to working with the state and our local electeds, making sure that we get the people and the local contractors on those jobs to do them. But you know, when the state pitches in and helps out with that, you know, it's really a good thing. And you know, we haven't even started to discuss infrastructure, roads and bridges, things like that. So it's really, really, really good. Really good. It's going to keep a lot of us working. It's going to put a lot more people to work. It's going to give us an opportunity to recruit. So I'm really happy about it.
What about politics here? Just the last question before you go. I know you want to get ready for the holiday weekend.
Oh, no, absolutely. You're good, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering here. I mean, we're kind of in the, the summer, kind of laid back a little bit. There's always something simmering. You know that. I'm just wondering what the fall looks like.
The pool, the cold beverages coming. The fall is going to be interesting. We did our screening. We're looking at finalizing our candidate endorsements. Obviously, the State House and State Senate primaries got pushed back. So the primary is going to be August 2nd. There's going to be a few contested primaries, which is going to be interesting. Obviously, we have a dog in the fight. Our own Kelly Harris running in OH3 in a crowded primary. It's her against four other men, so I know she's doing a great job. She's knocking on doors. She's raising money. She just had an event that was well attended, so I think that, you know, she's going to give herself every opportunity to win. Obviously, you got to get the vote out because not a lot of people know there's a primary. But we're also looking at the judges who are supportive of us and, you know, help us with our programs and stuff. We're making sure we get out and support them. And politics and elections going to be interesting this year. We just have to see what happens. Obviously, the maps changed a little bit in the State House and State Senate. They didn't change a lot. We know that these maps are only going to be good for 2 years, so we're going to have to turn around and gear on up again for it. But I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting. I'm really, you know, I love Ohio, and obviously our number one focus is to make sure Tim Ryan gets elected to the Senate. But I'm also keeping a close eye next door on Pennsylvania and John Fetterman. So I think that's going to be great, too, and I think he has a great chance to win. And, you know, one thing I'll share with you real quick that I've talked to everybody about, you know, a few years ago when Jerry Springer thought about running for governor of the state of Ohio, you know, you do a ton of polling. And it's stuff that plays to your strengths, and you do a ton of polling that stuff to plays to your negatives as well, because you don't want to be going out and touting something that is polls negative because it'll hurt you. But, you know, the number one thing that polled negative with Jerry Springer, and you would think it would be his show, was not his show. It was that he doesn't live in Ohio. And the number one thing that's polling negatively with Dr. Oz is that Dr. Oz has never voted in a Pennsylvania election, and now he's running for a Senate seat there.
Ooh.
So I think that means a lot to people and holds dear, and I think John Fetterman's going to do great in that race.
Yeah, he's quite a candidate. That's definitely a race to watch. And, of course, a swing state as well. Ohio used to be in that category. That doesn't seem to be anymore, though.
No, maybe we can get back there, but it's going to take a lot of hard work. Yeah,
I hear you. All right. Dorsey Hager, Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find more at columbusconstruction.org and follow them on Twitter, BuildCentralOH. You take care, my brother. I'm going to let you go. Enjoy the holiday weekend. We'll talk to you in August, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's our first Friday with Fred. Fred Redman, Secretary, Treasurer, and Vice President of the AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook. And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. Connecting people with employment, good wages, great benefits. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars. Started this segment, oh my gosh, 8-9 months ago. And I heard that he was going to fill in as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Obviously some changes after Rich Trumka passed away almost a year ago. Liz Shuler took the number one spot. And at the convention in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Fred Redmond, well, it was all unanimous. Secretary Treasurer, Vice President of the AFL-CIO. Fred Redmond, congratulations. How are we doing today, my brother?
Well, thank you very much, Flash. I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Good, good, good. You know, last Friday, we played Tom Conway's nominating speech at the convention. And I tell you, you know, when I first heard it on the Steelworkers website, I got all kind of emotional listening to it. I can't even think about what you were going through on that day. But let's reflect on that. This was monumental. You're the first African-American to hold this spot. Liz Shuler, the first woman. This is a day for the history books, Fred.
Well, it was a very historic day. It was a humbling day. You know, what I was going through while Tom was making that fantastic nominating speech was went through a pause of reflection, you know, on my career with the union and focusing on the work that I did with the steel workers and the work that we rolled out at our convention. And you know, it was a proud moment. You know, me and Liz was at the forefront of the thing, but I think that it was a proud day for the American labor movement to elect the first woman president of the national labor movement in the United States. And, you know, I was just humbled and honored to be elected as the highest ranking African American in the history of the American labor movement. So it was very humbling, Flash. It was very, very emotional. You know, I had my family there, my wife, that week. We had celebrated our 47th wedding anniversary. She's been along on this journey with me. And no, it was a very gratifying moment. And then when everything died down, then, you know, I started to think about all of the work that lay ahead of us, and I'm excited about getting the work done.
Yeah, if I said, oh, now what did I get myself into?
What did I do?
I'm supposed to be retiring. Wait a minute.
Right. But now look, I mean, it was, you know, we you know, Liz and I are both excited, we're motivated, we're energized, and the convention itself, you know, it just really, really gave a boost of energy to the labor movement. I mean, people were excited. They left there you know, looking forward to the future of organized labor, the future of work in this country. And, you know, there's some exciting yet challenging times that we're going through in the labor movement. And I'm just so privileged to be working with a great trade unionist like Liz Shuler.
Oh, yeah. Great lady there. No doubt about that. Put in a good word for me. I want to get her on the show. Can we arrange that?
Absolutely. She'll be happy to come on. We'll make it happen.
Good, 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 good.
No problem.
All right, let's unwind a few things here. I mean,
the big
takeaway at that convention, and we've been hitting this pretty hard on the show, is organizing, and obviously it's happening right now, whether you like it or not. I'm speaking to the right wing right now, okay? But it's happening, and obviously the AFL-CIO wants to keep it happening. All unions want to keep it happening, and I know Liz made the announcement about organizing 1 million new members in the next 10 years, and part of that is engaging with young workers, because I think you're seeing, especially those between like 18 and 34, you're seeing a lot of organizing going on right now. Maybe we could speak to that right now. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that goal? And I've heard Liz say that that's the floor, not the ceiling.
Yeah,
how do you feel?
That's exactly right. I'm sorry, Flash, but that is the floor. That's not the ceiling. We think we could do a lot better, but we wanted to, you know, put a number, you know, attach a number with the effort, you know, just to keep people focused, you know. But, you know, look, I call this a John Lewis moment, you know, in the American labor movement. I mean, for the first time, Flash, as I've been involved in the labor movement, we see international unions coming together from building trades, public sector, private sector, government employees. You know, I mean, if you take the Amazon effort in Bessemer, Alabama, we have 32 unions that sent organizers down to Alabama to help try to organize those workers in Bessemer. And, you know, without a discussion or without any concern that, you know, I'm going to avail resources, but, you know, these members aren't going to join my union. You know, we was helping RWDSU with a huge organizing drive. And I say this is a moment that I've never seen, because the labor movement and all 57 of our affiliates know that the primary focus on organizing is to organize workers. You know, if not into my union, you know, it strengthens the labor movement if we could assist in organizing them into a union, you know. So this is a moment that we felt that we had to capture. When the momentum is in the labor movement, that we need to fight for all workers in this country. So our strategic organizing initiative, what it does is we set the target of 100,000 new members and 1 million new members in 10 years. And we're putting the pieces together right now. We're looking at the financial obligation on all of the affiliates to be a part of this, so that what we want to do is put organizers out in the street, the organized workers, without a message of, well, this is, you know, we organize a unit of this union or that union, you know, organized workers, and then we'll sort the rest of it out later. Mm-hmm. This is a moment that I haven't seen in the labor movement. And, you know, this is a time where we have to just capture upon this momentum, because workers are hungry. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, workers want to share in the wealth that they help to create every day. Workers want more safety and health protections on the jobs, especially young workers, as you reference. You know, I mean, we get calls and, you know, we get inquiries every day about what do I have to do to improve my work situation. I mean, the COVID, you know, really pulled away the Band-Aid off of what corporations was doing. You know, they classified these workers, you know, as being essential 1 minute. And then when the COVID died down and, you know, people went back to the bargaining table, they treated them like they were disposable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a moment where the labor movement is unified and trying to capture this momentum. And, you know, we're putting together our strategy now. And then the exciting thing, Flash, we're looking at and we're hearing from non-traditional industries. You know, we announced at the convention the formation of our Sports Alliance, you know, where we brought in the women's soccer players. We have the NFL Players Association. We have some very, and the Steelworkers just organized the United States Football League, who's part of this coalition. We're having some very serious talks, and we hope to announce sometime soon Major League Ball, the Major League Ball Players Association, and we're beginning to have discussions with the WNBA. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's exciting because there's an appetite from people who makes millions of dollars, you know, to understand that, you know, they want to improve their working conditions. We also have a lot of inquiries from the tech industry, from Silicon Valley, from folks in IT, and, you know, folks who really, really want to be a part of a movement to improve safety and health on the job, to improve their wages and benefits. And then, you know, there's a large outcry from some of the major corporations in this country, Apple, Starbucks, Amazon, you know, and we're going to capture that momentum. So this is an exciting time, Flash, and, you know, the labor movement is united around this effort, and we're going to put forth everything in the bail, you know, resources in terms of going out to have a conversation with unorganized workers throughout this country.
And you couple that with a worker-friendly National Labor Relations Board. I mean, wow, right. Jennifer Abruzzo is doing gangbuster work, making
Absolutely.
Sure that people who organize get a fair shake. That's so darn
right.
important. We have not had that in such a long time, such a long time.
No, it's been a long time. And, you know, Jennifer Abruzzo's position on focus groups and, you know, employee intimidation has been the voice that we've been looking for. You know, in order to, you know, make sure that workers get a fair share and a fair shake if they decide that they want to join the union. But we also still got a lot of work to do on passing the PRO Act, and that's definitely still on our agenda. But, yeah, this is an exciting time for workers in this country.
You know what I like about Jennifer Abruzzo? She's willing to look at old decisions, what we call precedent, to revisit them. Gee, I wonder where she got that idea from, huh?
Well, I told her 2 weeks ago it wasn't unique, you know? But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when we look at, you know, what happened in the Supreme Court, you know, I never thought that, you know, Roe versus Wade, I just never thought that it would be abruptly ended. I always felt as though the Republicans would try to chip away at it, but to eliminate a woman's rights to choose and to take away women's constitutional rights, reproductive rights. It was a sad day in America last week, Flash, when the Supreme Court came out with that ruling.
You know, it's amazing to me. The Republicans traditionally have been so aligned with corporate America. I mean, you look at that. That's where they get most of their donation dollars from. You take a look at DeSantis in Florida.
Right.
I mean, look at the fight he's having with Disney, which is supporting his state, okay? Let's be honest here. And these companies, too, many of them have announced, these were conservative companies, Amazon, Home Depot, I think Kroger is another one. A number of them announces they are willing to put money aside for women to go to other states if they if they need to get an abortion. It's just amazing to me. I don't want to get into that, but bottom line is we live in a different America today, and it's so important that people are registered and vote. So important. Let's get back into the AFL-CIO convention here.
Sure.
One of the issues here is immigration. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago, Fred, you remember this. I think it was the Gang of Eight. They were very close. We had Republicans and we had Democrats. And they realized we have a problem dealing with illegal immigration in America. And there was a game plan. We came close and then all of a sudden, poof, it disappeared. And what happened since? We've even gone farther apart. And I know at the convention, this was addressed. What can you share with us, Fred?
Well, what we're going to do is, you know, we're going to double down our efforts on common sense immigration reform, especially after the tragedy that took place this week regarding the, I think it was 51 folks who died in the semi-trailer. But at the convention, you know, we heard from workers, Flash, you know, they came to the convention and they talked about their fear of being deported. You know, they talked about how they pay taxes, how they participate in society, but yet they have this fear of being separated from their children, you know. So, you know, we have thousands of members in the labor movement, okay, that, you know, have that undocumented status. I've had it for a long time. We got a lot of members in this labor movement. We have children who was born in the United States, and, you know, regardless of what the Constitution say, that children is being faced with, you know, situations that really surprised me, you know, because they wasn't nationalized. U.S. citizens. They was having a hard time, you know, getting college scholarships and getting college loans and with first-time homeowners and that sort of thing. And these are people who contribute to society every day. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do at the AFL-CIO, you know, we're pulling together a task force that's going to be, you know, chaired by President Shula, who's going to really look at the situation of immigration and how our members are being adversely affected. And then we're going to put together a plan to take it on Capitol Hill. So, you know, I mean, look, the only thing that we want, you know, we want people to, you know, quite naturally abide by the immigration laws. But we got people that have been in this country a number of years. They participated in society. And what we're looking for is a common sense path to citizenship in this country, because we're talking about people who go to work every day, make contributions to society, pay their taxes, you know, have become established in their communities, and they're workers and as members of our unions. And we're going to focus on trying to work with our allies and some of our community partners who's working on this issue, like LACLA, the Labor Latin American Coalition for Latin American Advancement. We're going to be working with different groups, and President Shula will be chairing the table where we're going to put together what we feel, looking at some of the approaches that's been made, like you talked about the Gang of Eight, and we're going to put it on the table, and we're going to fight like hell to try to get it passed.
You got to do that. You got to do that. All right, a couple minutes left here, Fred, and I really appreciate your time. Voting rights. You know, we're hearing a lot about the November elections. You know what's going on in various states with voter suppression laws, and they're turning the screws and making it difficult. I would imagine this came up at the convention. Anything you could share with us in that arena?
Well, we put together a strategy going into November. We've identified 9 battleground states. You know, we're talking about states like Nevada, Arizona, Georgia. You know, we're looking at North Carolina. We're looking at Pennsylvania. But, you know, we're looking at 9 crucial battleground states where we have the density of the trade union movement. And, you know, if we put our efforts in those states, you know, behind the senatorial, the congressional, and the governor's races in those states, then we think we have a shot going into 2024. So we're going back to an old tactic, Flash. We're going out to talk to our members. We're going to make sure that our members understand the issues that are affecting them. We're going to listen to them. And then after we have those discussions, we're going to talk about the candidates and the specific races and talk about those candidates' records. So it sounds simplistic, but for too long, I think we've talked at our members instead of talking to them. So we're going to try that approach this election cycle. We're excited about it.
Fred, if our politicians talk to their voters,
right,
and listen to them, we'd have a different America right now. If you take a look at the polling, you know, people want higher wages. They want better benefits. They want pensions. They want paid time off. Maternity leave. I mean, all these issues that are so important to the working class, if they would listen and if they would legislate on those issues. Oh, my
Absolutely.
God. Yeah, it'd be a different America.
People's success. You know, so, you know, we're excited. All 57 of our affiliates is kicked in. Like I said, we're going to focus on 9 specific states. And we're going to get Stacey Abrams elected governor of Georgia. And we're going to win a senatorial seat in Pennsylvania. And, you know, we're going to go out and build the landscape so that we could have a serious discussion and fight in 2024.
Amen, my brother. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer, Vice President of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org. You take care. Enjoy your holiday weekend. Well deserved. You've been a busy guy. The transition has been seamless. So we'll do this again in a month. Okay, my brother?
Okay, thanks a lot, Flash. You take care. Have a nice, happy 4th for you and your listeners.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we've got a special show for you. We have the president of the American Federation of Teachers. That would be Randy Weingarten. And we'll follow her with Hamilton Nolan, one of the great reporters at In These Times magazine. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful holiday weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.